when you're asking human beings to come into a gym and trust you with their bodies and their dreams and their identities to like make a hard lift or learn a really difficult move, you're basically getting them in their most vulnerable position.
Welcome to the Barbend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by barbend.com. Today I'm talking to Alyssa Royce, owner and coach at Rocket Community Fitness, formerly Rocket CrossFit, in Seattle. Today's episode is a bit different from the norm, and Alyssa joins us to talk about a variety of issues regarding representation, diversity, and inclusivity in fitness. Some listeners may be familiar with Alyssa's name after an exchange she had with CrossFit founder and former owner Greg Glassman went viral in June 2020. Alyssa had written to Glassman expressing concern over CrossFit's silence regarding the death of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement. Glassman responded with a now infamous letter calling Royce delusional and saying he was ashamed of her comments. Glassman's letter and later tweets and Zoom recordings stirred immense controversy, eventually leading to his resignation and the ultimate sale of CrossFit. Alyssa's perspective, though, extends well beyond her experience from last summer. She's a longtime coach and business owner in the fitness community, working across multiple strength sports. In this recording, she gives her perspective on the responsibilities of multiple stakeholders in strength, from business owners and brands to athletes, coaches, and fans following along at home. I should say it's a deep conversation that focuses on subjects that could be sensitive to some listeners. However, I hope you give it a listen. I do want to take a second to say we're incredibly thankful that you listen to this podcast. So if you haven't already, be sure to leave a rating and review of the Barbend Podcast in your app of choice. Now let's get to it, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Alyssa, thanks so much for joining us. And I think to give a little bit of context as to why we're having this particular conversation, which is a bit different than some of the other recordings we'll have on the Barbend Podcast, it's worth talking about an experience you had last year in interacting with CrossFit HQ and Greg Glassman. It was in early June of 2020. You wrote a letter to CrossFit regarding CrossFit's, at the time, silence regarding the Black Lives Matter movement, the response to the death of George Floyd that really, in many ways, captivated the United States and many parts of the world. Greg Glassman's response to you was what really went viral, for better or for worse, and ultimately was kind of the first domino, maybe not the first domino, maybe it was a domino, in his eventual resignation. And just to give our listeners some context, that letter you wrote, I believe it was on June 3rd of 2020. How long did it take you to decide to reach out to CrossFit HQ about their silence on the issue? And what was your thought process and how did that evolve to where you actually decided to go ahead and pull the trigger and do that?
Well, it was actually a very long process for my deciding to send that letter. But you have to, what I think people don't understand is that it was a process that was, you know, it was steeped in a years-long relationship, right? So my relationship with them in that regard started, oh my gosh, like 5 years ago maybe, when they were banning trans athletes from competing in the open. And that was actually how we got to know each other, because I did what I apparently do and spoke up. I was like, this actually isn't okay, and you misunderstand the science, and this is just a bad stand to take. So the letter that people saw that sort of looked like the first thing ever you heard from me wasn't at all even kind of the first thing CrossFit had heard of me. So it was built on this relationship. But then the pandemic hit and the Black Lives Matter protests were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And CrossFit was not only not speaking out really, but when they were saying things that were really just bad. I mean, I don't even know how else to say it. Like, it was just bad. And Brady, my husband and I, were looking at our affiliation with CrossFit and saying, my God, we share this name. So we are going to de facto be lumped in with the behavior of this brand, of these people, what people are seeing. And we didn't want that. From a business perspective, it ran counter to that. So you know, I wrote the letter. I showed it to a few people. Everyone said, please, you know, send it. We're worried about this thing also. So, you know, that part, I write quickly. that part didn't take long. And then from the time that Greg responded to the time that I posted it was probably 5 minutes, honestly. Because I had already queued it up as a blog post on our website to explain why we were disaffiliating. I was hoping for a different response from them. But when I didn't get it, I was like, oh, well, okay, here we go.
Is there a response that you think would have been fulfilling at that point? Because your stance and your thoughts were that they had not responded yet. They were already late to responding. Was there anything that could have been said? And again, we're speaking in hypotheticals here. I want to make that clear. Was there anything that could have been said that would have made you reconsider disaffiliating?
I actually love that question because the answer to that question lies in the fact that I don't expect perfection from anybody ever. Like, perfection is a myth. It's a lie. There wasn't one correct answer, except that all it would have taken was, yeah, dude, we hear you. Can we work on this? Can you help us with this? You know, what should we be saying instead of what I got? So I understand that the process of, you know, shifting a brand, of cultural change, of all of these things is long, complicated, and messy. But if you start with, you know, screw you, there's nowhere to go. So that really all it would have taken was, yeah, we're open. Let's talk.
I think that one thing I'm very curious about, not that I think, I'm just very curious about, because you are involved in multiple parts of the strength community, and it's not every day we get to talk to someone who kind of bounces back and forth between this community and strength and this community and strength. It's always a special day. Normally it's through a multi-sport athlete. Sometimes it's through a coach, a parent. You are all of those, a gym owner, you are all of those things. What obligation do you think sports governing bodies, which CrossFit is, right? They run the CrossFit Games. It's a little bit different because they are a for-profit company and they are also the sports governing body, and they're kind of the highest echelon. It's not like they're nested.
It's a fiefdom, you know.
It's not like weightlifting where it's, you know, USAW is nested under the IWF, which is related to the IOC. It is just CrossFit. So what obligation do you think, or responsibility do sports governing bodies have to speak regarding social issues? Because, you know, I'm curious how we might determine what is a big enough issue for them to speak on. Obviously, not everything in the news is going to warrant a comment from a sports governing body. So do they have that obligation? And if so, where do we kind of start drawing the lines of where that obligation kicks in?
Yeah, I think I would take it down to every single human being, I think, has an obligation to speak out on issues of oppression and social justice. Now, you know, I say that there are people who are themselves oppressed or who are at risk or whose jobs are at stake who don't have the privilege to be able to speak out. And so you have to sort of honor that as a starting point. So going up from there, when you've got the governing body, whether it's USAW, who I think Phil Andrews has taken the lead in pretty much all the best ways possible, or CrossFit, I think that they have an absolute obligation to speak out on behalf of social justice issues, because sports and gyms and training are where individuals come together that form communities. And when communities are empowered, that's where not only do individuals succeed, but we are actually able to affect social change. And so I think that if you see a group of people who are being oppressed or harmed by any sort of social injustice, and you choose silence when you have the power and the privilege not to choose silence, I think that that is a moral failing. And, you know, people will say that that's unfair. It's not my job. It's not whatever. But it's also actually not all that hard. Like, I am really one small and shockingly friendly, despite what some people think, person. And I'm able to say, yo, you know, your behavior is hurting people. So when I spoke out because they were banning trans athletes from competing in the open, you know, it wasn't at the time because I necessarily had any deep knowledge or interest in the trans community beyond just those are human beings who are being denied the opportunity to gather in community and feel empowered and feel strength and test their limits. And that was wrong. But also because the people who don't understand those issues are being denied the opportunity to, like, grow and learn and change by being part of an inclusive community. So I don't see social justice as a one-way street. It's not like you people do something nice for those people. It's more like we all come together, and as a result of learning and growing from each other, the world evolves and becomes a better place. And that's happening in warp speed right now. like you know, we are in some sort of firing forge. And I think that when brands miss the opportunity to support that growth and change, they actually, you know, they put their business at risk.
I'm curious what the community reaction, or at least what the reaction that you got to, about the reaction you got to when you spoke out about 5 years ago regarding trans inclusivity. Because I will say this from personal experience, as a content producer, Barbend, you know, there are times when we publish things, and I'm not speaking to trans inclusivity specifically here. I'm speaking to things where, whether we speak out against something or try and take a stand, which we are not perfect at. I do want to clarify.
Nobody's perfect.
We're not always quickest, yeah. We're not always perfect, but there are times when we push content out that I just assume will be non-controversial. And I, in my heart of hearts, I think, I circle up with my editorial team. They're much smarter than I am. And we all come together and we say, okay, this is the right thing to say. People will support this and they will feel supported by this, which is why we're doing it. However, it is the internet. It is the age of social media. And nothing comes without backlash, it seems. I'm curious what backlash, if any, coupled with what positive responses you received 5 years ago, because it's a very different place now. We're in a very different time than we were back then.
Yeah, it's, boy, I mean, 5 years, it is a different world. So back then, you know, it's interesting. I met some of the people who are now my closest friends as a result of that, which has been a wonderful gift. But back then, I think people, there was a lot of confusion. I did meet, you know, had a conversation with Greg Glassman after that. And I've told the story partly so that people don't think I just hate Greg Glassman. But we met and we talked about it and we didn't agree on anything about it. But the last thing he said to me was, you know, hey, never stop speaking your mind, which my husband sort of laughed like there's no chance of that.
That seems to be your thing. one of your things.
It hurts not to. But the response to me overall was actually really positive that came directly to me. The response was overwhelmingly positive. The change at CrossFit took a while, but it happened. But I think that created, you know, there's a lot of people who sort of still hate me just for that. Like, you know, that CrossFit shouldn't have been forced to let trans people compete. And there's a lot of people who are really mad at me about that. But it was much smaller compared to what happened in June. You know, what happened in June went like viral beyond any expectation. And honestly, had I known that would happen, I wouldn't have done it at all. So I'm glad I didn't know that it would happen.
Well, I'm curious about that because you say you're someone who it hurts you to not speak out. And then you say, looking back in hindsight, looking at the consequences of what happened, you might have hesitated or might not have done it. Is that something, if at the time you had known it would become mainstream news, that it would be covered on major news outlets and on television and everyone and their training partner would be talking about it, I feel like you would have gone about it maybe in a different way, but you would have done something. How might you have changed your response? What might that have seemed like?
Every time I tell someone I'm going to try not to speak out, they're like, yeah, Alyssa, that won't work.
I can't lay off the hook because you say I might not have done it that way, but at the same time, you're like, I can't not speak out. So what is it?
It's hard to explain. There's a tremendous cost to doing it. And as I said earlier, you know, I have my standing joke. I think this is still PG rated, but my standard joke is that I have every privilege in the world except a penis. And I'm usually able to get those to do what I want when I need them to. So like I come from a point of privilege, but it doesn't mean that there's no cost. So what happened in June was really emotionally expensive. You know, like, I had to get a therapist to help me process through the trauma. I went on, you know, Xanax to try and sleep at night, which didn't work. Me and drugs are not a good mix. I don't know that I would have done anything differently, but I would have steeled myself and been prepared for it. Because I wasn't prepared for it. It happened so fast that I couldn't catch my breath. And there was tremendous cost, you know, it put a whole lot of emphasis or a whole lot of focus on our little gym, which was already struggling, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic. Everything's crazy. There's like a tremendous social uprising all over the world. So because we're so politically active, our, you know, everything was already tense. And there were a lot of people who ended up leaving our gym, not because they were angry that we did it, but because it was just too much pressure to be part of it. Right. And so I would have warned our community. I would have maybe, you know, asked if like anybody needed anything, but you know, we just weren't ready.
Were the gym members getting inquiries from the press? Were they kind of getting hounded at all? Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, not gym members so much, but like, you know, our coaches and stuff. And it was, you know, it was hard. And it sort of gets back to the, like, I think there were people who interpreted that thing as us saying that Rocket is perfect, which Rocket is not perfect. Rocket's never been perfect. You know, we are trying to do our best in an imperfect world. And so we're always, you know, we're constantly growing and changing. If you go back and look at the history of Rocket, for instance, the whole, you know, the trans thing was interesting because we were certainly not a trans-friendly gym when we opened, not because we didn't want to be or didn't care, but because we were doing things out of habit, right? So we were a CrossFit gym. We had leaderboards. Leaderboards are for men and for women. Well, where does that leave your non-binary members? And those were issues that had never occurred to us until we were put in a situation where we had to ask those questions. And then we had to make the hard decision to say, oh yeah, it turns out leaderboards don't jibe with the ethos that we're trying to create. So we had to change. And so when people were sort of assuming that our taking a stand on this meant that we thought we were perfect, you know, that was hurtful to the community because they're like, well, you know, you're not perfect either, but we never have been. Just like everybody else, we're a work in progress. So we, you know, meet challenges, learn from challenges, change as a result of challenges, and then go forward to the next challenge because, you know, perfect. You're never finished.
Well, no one is perfect, but are there any governing bodies, brands, or other community leaders or sub-communities in the strength space that you think are doing an admirable job of leading the charge for inclusivity and communication?
I mean, you know my bias. You know I love USAW, but I think USAW has done an absolutely stellar job. And I've had lots of conversations with Phil about, you know, about trans athletes and about events and about education. And he's a great example of somebody who has always, he's met I don't know with I will find out and followed it up with I will do something. And I think USAW has time and time again, you know, been on the right side of history. And they're very quick to speak out. You know, they, whenever an issue presents itself, they've got a statement out within 24 hours and it's usually backed up with some sort of action.
I will say, as a disclaimer, I did not prompt Alyssa to say this, nor did USA. Barbend is the official media partner of USA Weightlifting. I love disclaimers. If you ever talk with me off the record, you know I absolutely love disclaimers. So, but I did not prompt her to say this. USA Weightlifting did not prompt her to say this. She's not under duress or anything.
Nope.
But I do have
Phil
to give
doesn't
that,
pay me.
I do have to get that organizational partnership disclaimer out there. Actually, the opposite of that, you probably pay USA Weightlifting.
I pay USA Weightlifting. I do. Yeah, we pay dues as a gym and as a coach, and I don't know how many competition fees they've gotten, you know, from my daughter.
How do regular companies find customers like you that will praise the company and then just keep forking over cash? That you're like the unicorn for these for these brands.
I don't know. Alaska Airlines gets it too, man. I'm always posting how much I love them. I mean, that's the irony, right? Is like I love business that's well done. Like, and I think of everything. I don't know how much you've like Googled into my past, but I used to be a sex educator, right? That was literally what I did, was I helped people have the kind of sexual relationships that they wanted to have in the world. And I approach business and gym ownership in all of those same ways. You know, tell me who you are. Tell me what you want. Show me your values. Let's see how we can work together to bring out the best in each other. So when I see businesses and brands and governing bodies like really doing that, I just get so excited. You know, it's like, oh, this feels so good. You know, let's come together. No pun intended.
I almost slipped by, but you. I appreciate it. I'm thinking of the Futurama meme where Fry is holding out the stack of cash and he's saying, shut up and take my money.
Totally. I mean, when I find a brand that really just sort of hits all those sweet spots, I go for it. And it's all, you know, it's also why people are, you often hear people say, like, keep your politics and your social justice out of your business, right? So to me, that fundamentally defies the rules of consent, right? Like, if I am giving you money on a regular basis, and I'm giving you like space in my brain and energy in the world, and you're out there supporting, taking my money to support causes that I find just absolutely reprehensible, whatever they are, hypothetically speaking, I'm going to be really, really pissed because you used me and my money and my labor and my energy to support something that I find reprehensible. But the converse is also true. And I have found that when the more open we became about our values and what we stand for, the more business we got. And we got people who were seeking us out because of that. And they became, just like I am for USAW or Alaska Airlines, they became these really vocal advocates of what we were creating. So when I do inclusive coaching workshops with gyms, I'm always like, dude, be public. Like, if you are a Christian gym, you rock that. You go out and say, you know, we are lifting for Jesus. I'm not going to give you my money, but lots of people are. And those are people who like deserve community, want community, and will support and promote you. And that's how, as you know, no matter how different we all are, we're allowed to build communities around our strengths. So, you know, fly your flag, be you.
I've been in the fitness industry and strength industry bubble specifically for longer than I care to admit. So my viewpoint might be a little bit myopic here. You're someone who has been in a lot of different industries, or at least a few of them across your career, some of them in fitness and strength, some of them not. Do you think there's anything specific to the fitness community or specific to strength communities that makes it more difficult or makes it, or conversely, makes it easier for brands to build community around that authenticity, around what they really believe?
I think it's easier because you're asking, when you're asking human beings to come into a gym and trust you with their bodies and their dreams and their identities to like make a hard lift or learn a really difficult move, you're basically getting them in their most vulnerable position, right? So if you are able to genuinely reach somebody and empower them from that vulnerable place, that's going to garner the kind of loyalty that you get in any relationship, right? So that's actual intimacy. I think our culture is afraid of intimacy because we confuse intimacy for sex, and they are two totally different things that do not always have to go together. But intimacy is where relationships are built. And so from a brand perspective and a business perspective, if you are able to reach people and keep them safe and empowered while they're in an intimate place, you're going to foster that kind of loyalty and growth.
Do you think that level of intimacy that the fitness industry allows or kind of opens itself to also increases the risk for violations of trust?
Oh, 1,000 bajillion%. So on every conceivable level, right? I think that you see this really just sort of like social violation of that trust when you see ads about like get a six-pack ab. You know, like your body's not good enough, get a bikini body. And that is taking somebody in a vulnerable place where they're admitting something about their body, and you're basically looking them in the eyes and saying, yeah, so you're totally not good enough, right? So that's a violation of intimate trust right there. And it's also just a lie, but that's a whole different subject. But then when you get into the realm of coaching and competing and traveling, I think there's lots of room for like more literal physical violations of intimacy and trust. That, you know, that range from I don't feel safe here or this gym makes me feel bad to actual abuse, right? And, but then because people are so dependent on that relationship and on that place to achieve their goals, they sometimes don't speak up. And that's, you know, that's a huge problem. That's a whole different ball of wax.
A lot of what we've discussed today comes down to communication. And I like how you emphasize not everyone has to be perfect. Not everyone has to a priori come from this pedestal where they're saying everything, all the right stuff. A breakdown of communication is more often what leads to public outcry, resignations. It's not necessarily because someone's starting from an imperfect place, because everyone is starting from an imperfect place. What can we do as members of the strength community or of strength communities to better facilitate communications at the grassroots level?
Let me clarify, communications between yourselves and your governing bodies, or just...
Communications between, well, there are a few different levels, and my apologies, I should break it down. Communications between athletes in the same, training in the same space, communications online where you're interacting with someone who might be in a similar strength sport and you're interacting with them via social media or messaging. Communications when you're at a competition, which is something that you have a lot of experience with across these sports, and you're interacting with your competitors, other coaches, officials, and obviously communication with a governing body. It could be with a referee or a judge, or it could be, you know, because I'm thinking of all the million ways that I've had to communicate with someone like USA Weightlifting over the years. I was late to send in some registration or something like that. There are a lot of different levels of communication, and so there are a lot of different answers to this question. So we can kind of start maybe where you think might be appropriate. But it's not just communication coming from governing bodies and coming from brands to the athletes. It's athletes talking to themselves, talking amongst themselves, and kind of working their way back up the chain.
Mm-hmm. So two things have occurred to me as you've been saying that. The first thing is that I always, and this will probably surprise a few people, but I always try to assume positive intent, right? So I like to assume that somebody's not actually a total jerk, right? And assume that if they said something, it's because they don't understand something. Occasionally, I'm given enough evidence to the contrary that I give up that idealism, but for the most part, so always assume positive intent. And the second thing I like to always do is answer a question with a question, essentially. Why do you think that? Why do you feel that? Why do you think this is happening? What did you think would happen? What was your goal? Because that tends to get us back to that intimacy place where somebody's sort of forced to own their own thoughts and actions, right? But if you're assuming positive intent and you're standing there with them, helping them own their actions and words, you can usually, that's a fertile place, right? You've all got your hands around this concept and you can move forward. So with the, you know, just because we started there with the trans athletes question, when people are like, okay, this is going to be terrible, you can never let those people compete. The question is, okay, why? What are you afraid will happen if we let them compete? You know, what is it that you understand about the underlying processes and principles and biology and whatever? And so to try and combat it with knowledge. You know, it's interesting that you brought up communication, because one of the biggest conversations I'd had with CrossFit for years was their absolute lack of communication, not only with affiliates, but with the outside world about what CrossFit is. Because it matters, you know, if you're asking 15,000 people to all carry the same flag, essentially, like, that flag has to mean something. And in the absence of meaning, you know, why are we going to keep carrying the flag? So I think that's my answer.
I like when guests get Socratic on this podcast, and I don't think it happens enough. So let this, if I ever reach, if you're listening to this and I ever reach out to you to come on the Barbend podcast, make sure you have a few questions to just shoot back my way, or rhetorical questions to kind of ask the audience, because I really do enjoy it.
I just love that you said Socratic. So that just made me happy.
I'm the least educated person in my family. I'm very much overcompensating. If my mom's listening to this, this is my apologies for not going to grad school. Is that I'll use big words occasionally. Let's blow this up to a different level. I don't want to say a bigger level. It's not because I don't want to say it's more important. But let's talk about how the fitness industry is viewed in mainstream society. What do you I know you just you all can't see this, listen, if you're just listening in, but I triggered something with this question. You are a gym owner, you are an athlete, you are a coach. What are some of the miscommunications or breakdown in miscommunications or just misconceptions that you see people outside the fitness industry having about the fitness industry? That's kind of my first question.
Well, I actually think it starts with a misconception that the fitness industry has about itself, which is that I think that the myth of the fitness industry is often sold that you know healthy when you see it, right? And that in order to be healthy, you have to have visible muscles and six-pack abs, and that's what strength is, and that's what healthy is. And I think that in and of itself is a misconception that the fitness industry has of itself, that that is our job, is to make people thin. And I will push back against that all day long, because this idea that fitness means thin is, I mean, literally, if you go back and study it, it's literally rooted in racism. And it's just absolutely absurd. And so I think that then filters out to what the general public's perception of the fitness industry is that the fitness industry is a bunch of people peddling, you know, body shame and thinness on people, which is going to tie for a lot of people, myself included, actually very deeply into sort of junior high and high school PE class fear and shame of being the last person picked and, like, you know, all of that stuff. And I think that the fitness industry, and I don't think this is true of like weightlifting so much, actually much less than most sports. But the sort of organizing principle of the fitness industry is that you're not good enough. And I think that that's a really, really, really risky place to start any relationship, right? Like, it's like negging. It's like these, you know, pickup artists who go into bars and like, yeah, you know, if only you could have gotten a shirt that fit you better to show off that tight bod of yours, right? So it's this whole, like, the fitness industry starts with negging, and it's just garbage.
I know that wasn't I know that wasn't addressed to me, but I feel, but you did that so convincingly. I feel a little bit nagged. I'm gonna go change shirts after this.
I have a hard time picturing you nagging someone in a bar. But, you know, if you're familiar with pickup, are you familiar at all with pickup artist culture?
Oh, I wasn't saying that it's something. Yeah. I was just saying, hearing that makes me feel.
Yeah, it makes me feel a little gross, right?
You did it so convincingly that it makes me, like, it feels like it was directed toward me. I have to ask, and I should have asked this at the beginning of the podcast, but we had so much to talk about, so much ground to talk about. How does one go from being an expert in sexual relationships to being so entrenched in the fitness and strength industries?
They are so exactly the same thing. The similarities between those two career choices are really simple. But it was also, you know, it was sort of a coincidence, right? I had a tech startup that I desperately wanted to work that was about, you know, women's sexuality and empowering women to, you know, find their sexual happiness. I think the timing was off in the market.
Wait, there was a tech startup that failed?
There was, like most of them do.
Oh my God. You never hear about these. You never hear about the 99.9% of these that exist.
What's amazing is that it was a tech startup built on women having better sex, which presumably would benefit not only women, but everybody who wants to have sex with women, right? Like, talk about a big market. But anyway, I met my husband when I was trying to get that off the ground, and he was starting the gym at the same time. And rather than continuing to fight, you know, sexism and misogyny in funding startups, I was like, I'm just going to go lift weights with this hot dude. And the next thing I knew, you know, here we are. My daughter was so happy, though. She made me promise, because I was certified to teach sex ed in Washington State. And she made me promise I would never teach sex ed at a school that she attended. And she was really, really happy when I finally walked away from that and started doing this full time.
I mean, is that a fair request? I feel like that's a fair request.
Totally fair request. Oh, I didn't push back in the slightest. Totally fair request. But her friends would still ask me stuff.
It's always interesting to me how many people who I interact with in the fitness industry, it's their second or their third career. It's a passion they find later in life. And I do think there is this misconception that fitness is something you find very young because you're an athlete, and then you maybe might be like a D1 athlete in college, but you don't make it pro, so you become a personal trainer and boom, you're in the fitness industry. And that is what the fitness industry is comprised of, those people. There are those people, and some of them are fantastic. Right, I'm not bemoaning those people, because if I did, I would be crapping on like 40 bar band contributors, which I am definitely not. There are some fantastic people who take that path in life. However, that is not all. That is not everyone in the fitness industry.
And that is the overriding point for me. Right, is that when people make that assumption, and when the fitness industry just markets those people, you're leaving out everybody else, right? And the truth is that it is everybody else that is A, your that's your target market if you're running a fitness business. Those are the people who we can reach with all of the stuff that we know fitness does for people. Those are all the people we can reach. And when we ignore those, you know, what good are we doing in the world when we're just preaching to the choir? You know, I think part of why I think Rocket has worked so well is because my husband is one. Well, he was never a, you know, Division I athlete, but he's a born jock. Like, he's just, the man has never seen any physical challenge that he couldn't just tackle and succeed. But I'm the opposite, right? I hated team sports. I was always picked last. I have a catastrophic list of injuries that has sort of, you know, it has forced me to modify everything. And between the two of us, we encompass both of those ends, right? So anybody who comes into our gym knows that they're going to be met with somebody who probably understands what they're going through. And I think that that's the biggest power of the fitness industry. And that's why I get so upset when brands like CrossFit just, like, you know, pardon me, but they just, you know, fuck it up and pay attention to just the games athletes. Like, okay, those people actually scare a lot of our potential market and potential members, you know? So it gets back to the sort of fundamental mistake that I think the whole fitness industry makes, is that, you know, the fitness industry is for jocks. It's not.
It's almost like it's comprised of many different people with many different backgrounds. Strange, and preferences.
Strange, huh? Right?
Just,
it's
like a community.
It's almost like diversity, right? It's like, it's just, it so, seems so obvious.
Well, I almost hesitate to ask my final question. It's not a, I promise, it's not a bad one. And it's, where can folks follow along with what you're doing, what you're writing, and along with Rocket Community Fitness? And I hesitate to ask that because we spent several minutes of this podcast talking about how you regret the impact that all this attention had on your gym. So I don't think that this episode of the Barbin podcast will go viral in the same way. But I that's why I kind of hesitated to ask, because I know you don't want to call undue attention to your members and your community.
Yeah, no, but I'm always happy to talk. I will say, if you follow us for social media stuff, you'll be sorely disappointed because I'm really, really bad at it. We don't post stuff all that often, but Rocket Community Fitness on Instagram is probably where we put most stuff. We also have a Facebook page that's Rocket Community Fitness. If you follow me personally, you get my daughter and her boyfriend weightlifting, my cat, and the food that I'm baking.
I will say that's good. It's good weightlifting content.
Yeah.
there is good weightlifting content. I mean, including, you have to point it out to me because I missed it, including a 300-kilogram... overhead rack hold. So there's some highlights out there. I'm just
the
saying.
Kid is. I've got some very strong kids living in my basement.
Oh, your grocery bill must
for sure.
Must be horrid,
dude. I can't even. Yeah, but they eat a lot. But so yeah, I'm very much on social media. And so you can find either my name or Rocket Community Fitness. And that's, yeah, we're there. And I probably won't, as you guessed, I probably won't stop speaking my mind anytime soon. At this point, I'm in it, so I may as well just push the ball all the way to cross the finish line.
Well, we're out of issues. Everything, we figured everything out, so.
Excellent, we've solved it. So now you just have to come to Seattle and we'll have a barbecue.
You'll have to find another community to fix, because fitness is done. It's.
Oh God, I wish.
Job completed.
Yeah, I think I'm sticking with fitness for a while. I'm sticking with fitness until everybody feels welcome in the fitness community. So,
well, I say this in the best possible way. You do have a lot of work ahead of you in that case, but I don't mean that in a pessimistic way at all.
No, I'm super, well, I mean, you know me well enough because we talk often, but I'm super optimistic and hopeful. My husband jokes that the only thing I know how to write are love letters. And even my angry letters are love letters, because if I didn't truly love fitness and truly love CrossFit, even for that matter, I wouldn't give a damn. But I do. So here we are.
Fair enough. Alyssa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, David. Have an awesome one.